All right, welcome to Card Mouth Life, episode 112. I'm Corey, and here's Daryl.
Yo!
Tippity-tap-typing on the keyboard.
Sorry, I gotta tell him what it's all about. It's all about T-Pain.
It is all about T-Pain. We've got a short podcast for you this week,
ooh,
and I think we have one primary concern here, and that's to talk about Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, but there's some other news that we ought to cover, too, I suppose.
Oh, hit me. I didn't know we had other news.
Well, there's just some minor things. So, okay. First of all, let me just say that we are sponsored by ManaTraders.com. ManaTraders.com will provide 14% off your first 4 months if you use the promo code CardKnockLife, all one word, at checkout. Check it out. Good source for renting cards on Modo.
Truth.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I thought you were saying, like, proof. I've done it. It works.
Yeah. No, it's gas. They're great. I might be renting some Teferis.
Yeah, you're going to have to if you sold yours.
I never had them on Modo. I had one in real life.
All right. Well, I purchased a couple in paper, but we'll get to that when we get to the bulk of the cast in our Teferi discussion because he is... Do you say GOAT or do you say G-O-A-T? I'm not really sure the lingo these days.
He's the GOAT.
He is the GOAT.
The GOAT, yeah. And occasionally, if I'm feeling very rambunctious, I give it a little goat noise stylings, but you are not going to get that today, sorry.
Bummer. Well, then. Anyway, I think he's awesome. But that aside, we're going to talk a little bit about the standard and modern events in Baltimore, just real quickly. Right in your neck of the woods, Daryl.
Yeah, I didn't get to go to those. I was a touch busy because my brother had popped into town on me on this weekend. Otherwise, I'd have snap went to these.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, but... Family came into town, and I felt okay going skipping these events. Didn't feel too bad.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't think it was, you know, it was a team event, there were classics. So
yeah,
we'll talk about the classics.
If it was a team event, which kind of bummed me out, because I don't have enough friends.
Well, you know, we talked about doing this one a while back, and then we just never ended up finding a third partner or booking a flight for me. But
yeah,
we'll have to catch the next one.
Yeah, it's a little rough.
But yeah, this was one of the few standard events that we've had since Dominaria has been released, so we can talk about that a little bit. We're certainly not experts on the field, though I've been becoming more of one as I play more Arena. I've been playing a lot of quote-unquote standard lately.
Do they have Dominaria on Arena? Or
they do now, yeah. And then the Modern Classic. And also, we have some spoilers for Battle Bond, which are purely just a land cycle at this point. But there's also some information about Battle Bond that I want to discuss.
Those lands are beautiful.
Those lands are cool. They're a little unusual. So let's start with that. Let's start with Battle Bond.
Yeah.
Battle Bond has a cycle of land spoiled. By the way, Battle Bond is the two-headed giant set, similar to Conspiracy being the kind of multiplayer set. Battle Bond is specifically designed for two-headed giant. It is mostly reprints. I think we've got about 90 brand new cards in a set of roughly 250 cards.
Still, it's fine.
But kind of refocused. I'm sure that we'll see some mechanics that seem to suit two-headed giant well, like we've seen Extort in the past.
Yeah.
Anything that says each opponent seems good. Cards like Ghostly Prison likely won't see play in this set or won't see, you know. There are certain cards that are awkward in Two-Headed Giant for bad reasons. So they'll clearly be picking the best choices and reprinting the best cards with the addition of Battle Bond. I don't know what you'd call these guys. Battle Bond Duels, maybe?
I don't know.
So these Battle Bond Duels, we're going to call them that. They are two colored lands, come into play tapped, unless you have two or more opponents. That's it. Simple, right?
So, the first thing I thought of was Commander.
Yeah.
I didn't even think a two-headed giant, and that's what this set was made for. These things are gas in Commander. If they had basic land types, oh boy, they would be a disaster for Commander. And they would be super expensive. But as is, they're still just pretty solid. Coming to play untapped, Taigas or whatever, you know, Badlands, whatever your Rakdos, your commander land of choice is. I could see them replacing some lands, but not all of them, because it could be really weird as your commander games roll on when you knock a bunch of people out and your land comes to play untapped, because you only have one opponent at that point, or comes to play tapped. That's real awkward. But most of the time in Commander, these are going to be straight up dual lands.
My question is, why don't they have basic land types? It seems like a miss.
I think that would be too good. So it's a lot of it is price control. Because, like, imagine what happens to these lands in this limited print set if they have basic land types for Commander.
Then the set gets bought. Then people play it. They care about it.
Right, but I think... These packs. But, like, the problem is there's not enough supply to meet the demand. Now, if this thing that they're doing with the Battle Bond lands, they print them in the Commander decks and stuff like that, and, like, that's their dual lands of choice for Commander decks moving forward... Then they could have put basic land types in this, and it would have been great. It would have been, like, an actual slam dunk. Because at first, you're going to have that price spike where these are going to be, like, $20, $30, $40. Because they're dual lands that you can fetch in Commander that basically can replace Underground Sea. And Volcanic Island, stuff like that. And then for people who are playing, like, CEDH and stuff like that, you just have more copies of Volcanic Island. But then when they reprint the ball in the Commander decks, you flood the market because the Commander decks are highly printed, so you get, like, this price control valve that causes the price to go down.
And I'm okay with that.
Well, no, that's ideal, but I think it's just, if they're not printing those in the Commander decks, like, if that wasn't their plan, then they couldn't put basic land types on these.
Even if they didn't, and these become, like, $20, $30 lands, first of all, fun to pull them out of the packs, right?
Sure.
But then, secondly, it's like, everyone that wants to play Commander to a competitive level, like, feels inclined then to buy dual lands because they're legal in the format.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, these provide an extra copy of a dual land for those types of players that already have the duels to fetch out.
Yeah.
But it's also an opportunity for players to not have to shock themselves for their double-colored lands when they fetch. So
yeah,
I don't see why we shouldn't provide that opportunity so you don't have to get into freaking reserve list conversations all the time.
Oh, I totally agree. I 100% agree with this. And having another, just even having a second copy of a card like Underground Sea and Commander makes you, like, be able to build your blue-black mana base way better.
Sure.
And, you know, you are soft to things like Back to Basics and Wasteland and stuff like that that do get played in Commander. But, you know, it's okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyways, the other thing I wanted to mention about these is the art is kind of unusual on some of them. So going along, looking at Spire Garden, that's the green red one. Looks like a Magic card. It's actually pretty phenomenal art on that one. Sea of Clouds, pretty typical, right? And then you get to stuff like Luxury Suite. Luxury Suite. What color would you think Luxury Suite is if you didn't already know?
See, I already know, but my first guess would have been that it was white black.
Because it's like black or blue, white, or something.
Well, no, white black because Orzhov was like the sort of the church guild, and I sort of associate sometimes a lot of corruption with churches and Magic the Gathering, like the Cabal and Orzhov,
something
like that.
Yeah, that's
and extort was an Orzhov mechanic, so Luxury Suite to me sounds black white.
Yeah, it is black red. Which I'm having a really hard time understanding how Luxury Suite is black red. And really, honestly, I'm having a hard time understanding what's going on here. Why are we in a Luxury Suite?
I don't know. Who cares?
Who cares? It's cool. It looks kind of like Blade Runner or like maybe like the... It looks kind of like the room where the Jedis hang out in Star Wars. But then... So we've also got Morphic Pool, Beautiful Promenade. All of them are these kind of future-looking cities. They're sort of not a typical Magic environment.
I like it.
So... Dug into that a little bit, and on the BattleBond page, here is what Wizards has to say about the flavor of BattleBond. It says, what kind of flavor can you expect? After all, our worlds are normally built with flavorful creative underpinnings and tropes. Theros, for example, was a Greek mythology set. Innistrad was Victorian horror. BattleBond goes to a rich well of flavor Magic has never touched before. Any guesses as to what that is?
The future.
Sports and games, Daryl. It's sports and games.
Ooh, Luxury Suite, okay.
Sports and esports alike.
Okay, Luxury Suite is a sports thing, yeah. All right, I dig it. I like it.
I don't think that we understand this as football and, like, basketball sports, but I think maybe, like, gladiatorial combat.
Yeah, blood sport,
Hunger
Games
style.
Yeah, Hunger Games, blood sport. Yeah, I can see it. I dig.
It's kind of cool. I think it's actually sort of fun. It sort of explains the name Battle Bond a little better.
Yeah.
It could be interesting. I mean, you know, this is the perfect place to explore environments like that, these supplementary products.
Absolutely.
However, this being a set that has predominantly reprints, I'm not sure how they're going to make that happen without a lot of new art, you know?
Oh, yeah, there's going to be a lot of new art.
Yeah, hopefully. That'd be exciting.
Yeah.
I always love new art.
I also like art. Art is good.
Art is good. Period.
Yeah.
All right, so then beyond Battle Bonds, and I look forward to seeing what's to come with that. I think next week is where our spoilers start. I'm not quite sure. We also had some leaks for our next core set, which are really nothing to write home about. A lot of commons that ended up being opened in Dominaria booster box packs. Yeah, weird, right?
They do that all the time. Like, the print runs get tripped up.
Yeah, I don't really understand how that happens, but it's possible that they were just intentionally put there.
Yeah, a lot of people, conspiracy theory that it was intentional that they were put there.
Which, fair enough, but, you know, there's just a bunch of stupid comments right now. There's this one goblin that's maybe worth looking at, but...
Mog War Marshal, we'll basically, it. Right? It we'll comes save to play, it makes a goblin.
Yeah, it's like a bad Mog War Marshal, or maybe a good Mog War Marshal, depending on the way you look at it.
Oh, bad. The answer's bad. Mog War Marshal was great, because when they killed it, you got a goblin. So it was like a 2-for-1.
This one doesn't have Echo, though.
I mean, sure. You paid the Echo most of the time.
Yeah.
Because you just wanted a death rattle, basically.
Yeah, death rattle. Ooh. Brings me back to my Hearthstone days. I haven't looked at that game for a while.
Neither have I. I've been playing a lot of Heroes of the Storm. But I digress from non-magic games.
Okay, yeah, sorry. Moving on.
Yeah.
The next thing I want to talk about, and we are going to try our best to cover Star City Games Classic Baltimore, which is the standard event. Excuse me, Star City Games Standard Classic Baltimore. There was a lot of blue-white stuff in the first weekend. It got me very excited. I've been playing a lot of blue-white on Arena, and I'm loving it. I think blue-white is in a very good place. But this weekend, in the Classic, white-black vehicles.
Yeah, a lot of recursive threats, a lot of card advantage threats, a lot of hard-to-kill threats you're seeing out of the aggro decks. I'm going to name specifically the threats I'm talking about there. A lot of Walking Ballista. Mm-hmm. That card's actually more expensive on Moto than it is in real life.
Is it really?
Yeah. It's like it's like $35 a piece on Moto, and they're like $20 in real life.
They're up to like $24, it looks like.
Yeah.
They're going up.
Walking Ballista, Scrap Heap Scrounger, Bomat Courier, a lot of built-in card advantage and removal for... that's my... I'll answer that later. four cards for card advantage, four Heart of Kirin, really hard to kill. So you're going to see stuff like that.
Yeah. So Heart of Kirin's are coming in against, like, the blue-white decks. They're good against, like, the Teferis and things of the world.
Yeah.
And this is a card that is a great card to see a lot of play because it's reprinted as a 4-of in one of those Challenger decks. So had that not been the case, we would be looking at a very expensive playset. But you can get a playset of Heart of Kirin's, a mythic, for $13.52, yeah. According to MTG Goldfish right now.
But yeah, like a lot of Bomat Courier and Scrap Heap Scrounger, those are your best threats. Because like Bomat Courier is just like inherent annoying creature that can like beat you up a little bit in the first couple turns of the game. And then like when your opponents use all their hand, they can generate some card advantage out of it and kind of refill and continue beating you up.
Yeah. Now, my question for standard players, which we are not, is when are we going to adapt to this Lyra Dawnbringer thing? There's a lot of Lyra Dawnbringer being played right now. And,
when are we going to kill Baneslayer Angel? Like,
yeah.
It's literally just Baneslayer Angel. Play a freaking Doomblade. There's not a Doomblade. There's not a 2-mana 1. But just, like, play Seal Away or Cast Out or... Vraska's Contempt or Ravenous Chupacabra. Play an actual removal spell.
Now, like, notably, Cast Down does not kill it.
Yeah, Cast Down.
That is our Doomblade of choice in this format, right?
That's why I said it's basic. That's why I said there's basically no Doomblade because there's a lot of legends in this format. It's not a Doomblade.
But we do have the Disintegration one where you sack a creature and give a creature -5.
Vicious Offering.
Vicious Offering.
Yeah, I mean, you have Vicious Offering, you have Doomfall if you can eliminate all your opponent's creatures. Glorybringer, unfortunately, can't kill Lyra, which is a big problem. All of these things you, like, depend on to deal with your opponent's creatures, like Glorybringer and Chandra and stuff like that, are all 4 damage. So Lyra's just big enough to, like, not get killed by them.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And, you know, the Seal Away is great, though. I think Seal Away is the hero we needed. And it really is the thing, and we'll kind of bridge this into the conversation that we'll have later about Teferi. But yeah. I think it's the thing that makes blue-white playable. I said that last week, and I'll maintain that. That really is the piece that makes the difference.
Like, Lyra just dies to Seal Away. You're just like, all right, Seal Away it. And if your opponent doesn't
So many cards do.
Yeah.
So many of the problems do.
Yeah, and if your opponent doesn't have Answer and Seal Away, you just, like, actually dealt with their huge tempo swing. And it's sort of the fear of, like, what happens if you cast Baneslayer and then don't untap with it. Like, in this instance, you can, like, untap with it, attack, and then, like, have a chance to interact with your opponent's removal. Because most of the removal isn't instant speed. Like, Seal Away exists unless Disintegration exists. But, like, your opponent's probably spending a lot of that in the early game to prevent you from getting to Lyra. And then you get to Lyra, and they're just like, well, that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So we see more of these blue-white historic decks. They have a lot of Seal Aways in them. They have all four of them.
Yeah.
Some of the blue-white control decks, and sometimes the historic decks are playing cast-outs as well.
I mean, they should.
We've got, like, Commit to Memories floating around. We've got Settle the Wreckage floating around. Just about every piece of removal in these decks either exiles or puts a creature back on top of their library, or in their library, in the case of Teferi. And so it's like, you can understand why the gods aren't being played nearly as much. Care of God dies to everything in this deck. And it ought to be that way. You know, we shouldn't be fearing the coming of Scarab God being just the end of the match for us. And a lot of decks kind of had that problem.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did.
So I'm happy to see Scarab God taking a back seat these days.
Take a seat on the bench. Not horrible, but we don't need you as a starter. Like, Scarab God being the starter is a little rough.
Let's go to Modern right away. We'll just mention, before we leave, though, Standard, second place, third place, both red, black, aggro, basically like another Heart of Kirin deck. Blue at Historic in fourth, Mono Green aggro in fifth and sixth, Blue at Historic in seventh, Blue at Control in eighth, Bant mid-range in ninth. We might have to take a look at that one. All right, so here's like our only mid-range creature deck in this format. I suppose the vehicles decks are sort of mid-range, but a little more aggressive. This one's playing 3 Karn, 3 Teferi, 3 Lyra, 3 Thrashing Brontodon, which is a great card against all of the previously mentioned removal plays.
Yep.
2 Servant of the Conduit, 4 Merfolk Branchwalker, 4 Llanowar Elf, 4 Walking Ballista.
Yep. Just
value creatures, you know?
Yeah, mana ramp and value.
Yeah, Seal Aways, it's got Ixalan's Binding, it's got Heart of Kirin's and Aethersphere Harvesters.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay, anyways, Modern.
What about it?
Modern Classic, let me hop to it here, was won by humans, no surprise there.
Yeah, I got the top 8 for that. I got humans, Affinity, Titan Shift, Mono Green Tron, Affinity again, Hollow One, Titan Shift, and humans again in 8th place.
Yeah. One of our writers, Zach Goldman, is in ninth there with Green White Company. He'll be doing a write-up on that one for our website soon.
Tilt?
Yeah, very close. I think he was out on Breakers, which I recently experienced the hardship of the opponent match win percentage keeping you out of the top 8.
Tilt.
And
Tilt.
I know where you've been.
Yeah, that's kind of rough.
Yeah, so I've looked through these decks. There's nothing too exciting.
Nothing too exciting in the Classic. However, I'm going to dovetail into the meat of our conversation.
Yeah, let's do it.
About Teferi, Hero of Dominaria.
Yes.
I'm going to read this card again, in case you people don't remember, but you should, because it's great. 3 blue-white for a legendary planeswalker, Teferi. +1, draw a card. Untap at the beginning of your next unstep, untap 2 lands. -3, put target non-land permanent into its owner's library, third from the top. -8, you gain an emblem with whenever you draw a card, exile target permanent and opponent controls. Comes to play with 4 loyalty.
All right, since we're going to a thorough examination of Teferi, let's start with, in a vacuum, what does this offer you?
In a vacuum, it offers you a card advantage engine that allows you to protect it.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm going to say something controversial, and you're going to laugh at me, and then I'm going to spend the rest of the podcast explaining to you why I think it's true. And this is sort of where I came up with it, and someone on the Blue White Facebook group has been talking about it. I think Teferi is better in Modern than Jace the Mindsmolder.
I don't disagree with that, actually.
I'm shocked. I figured I would get some argument from you. But I have I have a lot of preemptive things prepared in case there was no argumentation.
Okay, well, I can play devil's advocate a little bit, but I would think that it doesn't necessarily replace Jace the Mind Sculptor. It provides more useful functions for a lot of the decks that, you know, would be looking at Jace.
It's debatable if it replaces Jace. So I actually think, and I'm going to kind of segue into something different, I think this is a replacement for a Detention Sphere.
Yeah, I can see that. So that -3 is pretty versatile.
So that -3 is basically what you're using Detention Sphere for. There are times where it's not Detention Sphere, i.e. you're trying to beat a bunch of Lingering Souls or two Tarmogoyfs. Like, then it's not Detention Sphere.
Yeah.
You got me. It costs 5 mana versus 3. That's very relevant. But both of them can kill a Liliana the turn before in Ultimates, because Teferi will come down when Liliana's at 6. And spin it into your opponent's deck. Leaving them top decking you with a card advantage engine, and if you've killed their Raging Ravines and their creatures along the way, then you have a Teferi at 1 that's going to draw you some cards against their pseudo-empty board or empty board, which is puts you very far ahead against Jund. And it requires them to like draw Pulse and deal with it. Whereas if they drew Pulse, they could Pulse your Detention Sphere and get their Liliana back, and then you just be like, Disaster Zone.
Yeah.
So... But in most instances, this replaces Detention Sphere, as far as the function it's serving. And it also just protects itself. Now you ask, you know, if I'm not spinning and I'm putting it to 1, how does it protect itself? Being able to untap 2 lands is a very real thing in Modern. Because there are so many good 1 and 2 mana spells. So being able to just, like, clear your opponent's board on turn 4 with a Supreme Verdict. Have them play a thing. Untap, slam this on turn 5, draw a card, untap your lands, and kill their thing. Is a huge tempo swing. Because now you've got this card advantage engine that's marching towards the game-ending ultimate, providing you cards, and giving you the ability to protect it. All at the same time.
Yeah. It's something that no other Planeswalkers really have the ability to do. And it's kind of like the Planeswalker trope of 5 mana for a Planeswalker with, like, roughly 4 loyalty. It's got an ability that draws a card, and it's got an ability that removes a creature from combat. But this does both of those things so much better. You know, like, take, like, Obnixis, for example. You can, what's that one? Pay life, draw a card with the plus.
Yeah, it's Phyrexian Arena, and it's murder. Well, this is better for Phyrexian Arena, because untapped your lands. You don't lose life. And it also just actually deals with problem permanents, like a Blood Moon, or an Oblivion Stone if your opponent's tapped out, or an Indestructible Keranos. Things that are much harder for you to deal with. A Liliana, a Nahiri. Cards that actually can beat you outside of sort of this wealth of removal that you have as a control deck.
Sure.
So the key here is, we've got to find a bunch of 2-mana cards to put next to it.
Because, or 1-mana cards.
Well, 1 and 2-mana cards, correct. Because Teferi is really bad if you're not spending your mana, and Teferi is really bad if you're not going to do anything with the mana you used you get from untapping your lands.
Uh-huh.
So, like, that's sort of the trade-off. Is like, if you don't untap your lands, you're not getting anything out of it. Like, if you don't use the mana, then you just have a really bad card draw and, like, this pseudo-crappy Detention Sphere.
Sure.
So, like, you want to play it in either Esper or Grixis, Esper or Jeskai, because those have all the 1-mana removal spells. They have Bolt and Push and Helix and Collective Brutality and all these things that are 1 and 2-mana that you can use to interact with your opponent. And then untap your lands with the plus. Or use your mana to play like Sorceress Kanta and then untap your lands and hold up Cryptic Command. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or activate as Kanta twice. Like activate on your main phase, untap 2 lands, and have 4 mana to activate as Kanta again.
Yes, that is so relevant. I've done that so many times in Standard, it feels so good. Even Arch of Araska.
Ooh.
Same deal.
Yeah.
I mean, that one's a little bit more mana intensive, but Search for Escanta is very doable. Because like when you plus one, you want to draw a card. You're playing a reactive deck. Usually, you pass turn.
Yeah.
You can tap four lands to Search for Escanta, and it only costs you two mana.
Yeah.
And that is a small small price to pay. You're paying actually impulse.
So the turn after you play Teferi, you can untap and Escanta twice.
Right.
That's really big.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of the problem that these blue-white control decks had, because, like, you never really, like, Jace doesn't fit in with the rest of what you're doing, because, like, you're, like, a bunch of Path to Exiles and Cryptics and Logic Knots and Negates, and then, like, you have this, like, second plan, which is, like, a tap-out plan, which is, like, Supreme Verdict, Spreading Seas, Jace, Gideon, Detention Sphere, Crucible Worlds. And so, like, your deck is at odds with itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I, even though, like, Field of Ruin is a great Magic card and Spreading Seas is reasonably powerful, I've really cooled on Celestial Colonnade in that way, in blue-white control. That deck seems bad to me. Teferi kind of opens that up to me. I would be willing to play some number of Sealaways and Path to Exiles and Negates and Essence Scatters and Logic Knots and just these, like, one- and two-mana spells. But I think that the guys... A couple guys that I think teamed together, because their deck has a one-card difference between the two of them over the course of the team event. They both top 16 with different teams. And their decks have one-card difference, and that's because Benjamin Nichelich doesn't believe in playing a basic mountain ever in his life. He thinks the card is... He's got to think the card is like hot garbage, because I've never seen him build these blue-eyed control decks with a basic mountain. He always plays his Fire Wolf, you know. Whereas Kazunegri played him out. Like, yeah. That's the difference.
I think Ben's argument is that any of your non-basics becomes a basic mountain with Blood Moon on the table.
Correct. I occasionally like to fetch a basic mountain to not take 3 damage to be able to lightning bolt a thing against an aggressive deck. That's my opinion on it. Is having the option to fetch basic mountain is better than a sometimes comes in a play tapped island that also produces red. But otherwise, these decks are an exact mirror of each other. 4 Snapcaster, 2 Teferi, 3 Bolt, 4 Path, a Secure the Waste, 4 Serum Visions, 3 Helix, 3 Logic Knot, and a Gate, 2 Electrolyze, 4 Cryptic Command, 2 Supreme Verdict, 3 Ascanta, 3 Celestial Colony, a Field of Ruin, 4 Flooded Strand, a Glacial Fortress, 2 Hollow Fountain, 3 Island of Plains, a Sacred Foundry, 4 Scalding Tarn, 2 Steam Vents, Sulfur Falls, and then the difference is a Spire Bluff Canal versus a single mountain in the two deck list. Sideboard of Engineered Explosives, 2 Dispel, 2 Purge, 2 Dampening Sphere, which is a card we haven't seen much of, a Negate, a Ruined Halo, 2 Click, Settle the Wreckage, a Baneslayer, an Elspeth, and a Wear Gear.
Yeah, all of these Jeskai Control decks, the 2 Teferi Jeskai Control decks, there have been 3 of them so far, have had 2 Damping Sphere in the sideboard, and I don't know if it's just because they're copying each other, or, you know, they, I don't know if copying is a strong word, but that's the only place I'm really seeing it.
So here's the thing, is if you don't know how, if you don't know or remember how Teferi works, if you don't tap the lands, you have to untap your opponent's lands. So, like, having these sorcery speed answers that can come down on turn 2, like Dampening Sphere beats Tron, because it turns off their Tron, so it gives you time to, like, assemble Teferi, ultimate it, and, like, eat their lands so that you don't die while you have all these, like, lightning bolts and Snapcaster mages to beat them up with. And then against, like, the Storm decks, it's just, like, you have all these removal spells that kill their dudes. You play Dampening Sphere, and you make them find their answer for it while you're, like, pressuring them with all these lightning bolts and whatnot. And then you just have, like, a pile of Cryptic Commands, Dispels, and Negates, and you're just like, well, figure out what part of it I have, and hopefully you don't lose to it.
Yeah.
So, the thing I do like in this deck is the 2 Electrolyze. I think that card is insanely good right now against humans, and against some of the non-Hollow 1 aggressive decks, Affinity being the main one. I think that card's just bananas. It's a great cantrip. It can get you an easy 3-for-1. And so I'm interested in playing decks with that card in it. Plus, it's one of those things that, like, you can play on your main phase with Teferi, pay 1 mana, draw a card, try and hit your land drop, kill 2 things. Like, there's just there's a huge amount of upside that a lot of these cards gain by just having Teferi potentially in play.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree. Now, going back to your point, you said if you don't have your own lands tapped, you have to untap your opponent's lands. You can float mana. You know, you can float mana to your own lands.
Correct. It's just, like, people have to understand that, like, the lands, like, when the trigger hits a stack, the lands are targeted, and if you don't float the mana, you untap your opponent's lands.
Sure.
It's a minor thing. It may not be a big deal, but, like, understand that you might screw it up, because the lands have to be...
Not enough to.
Yeah. So the lands have to be... Oh, the lands you can just target. Never mind. It says untap two lands. So they're not targeted. So you just have to untap two lands. You can untap two untapped lands, I assume. I don't know exactly.
I don't think so. I think you have to target tap.
So you have to... Well, you don't target. That's the thing. So you have to float the mana and then...
Yeah. Okay. All right, let's look at another take on this, though. You're looking at the Jeskai side of things. I think that's a clear, favorite for this Planeswalker because of the, like, Lightning Helix being so good, Lightning Bolt being so good. Honestly, you don't even have to limit yourself to two mana because you play this when you have six lands in play and you've got Snap Bolt, you know, you've got Snap Path. Or on seven mana, you've got Snap Logic Knot.
Or Cryptic.
You've got Logic Knot to begin with. Or Cryptic, right. So those are all great plays. Blue-white control, I'm seeing kind of like a Miracles version of this deck.
Okay.
They don't go into the Spreading Seas plan anymore because Spreading Seas isn't great with Teferi. But they're playing two Jace, two Teferi, three Snap, two Vendilion Click, four Opt because Opt is something you can do with that mana on your opponent's turn. Also, Opt is a good way to enable Miracle spells like Terminus or, oh my god, what's the Angel one?
Intrigue.
Entreat, thank you. This deck is not playing Entreat, but primarily Terminus here. So, with two mana, if you've got Jace in play and you've stacked your deck with the Terminus on top, you have the opportunity to opt Terminus with two mana. That's a lot of bang for your buck if you're going to be playing a Teferi on your turn, tapping out, untapping your lands, and then all of a sudden out of nowhere, you're going to wrath the board.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty hard to come back from.
That's pretty brutal, yeah.
Yeah, in fact, this guy's playing Telling Time in his deck, which seems pretty good. Two mana, instant speed.
Very good. Put one on top, one in your hand, and one on the bottom. Oof.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that card is very good.
Set up your miracles.
That card is very good with miracles.
So this might be the new direction for blue-white control. I think we might just have to, go with four Field of Ruin against the mana,
the big
greedy
mana decks.
Big mana decks.
Yeah.
But it's a little light on Search for Azkanta for my liking. There's only one. I'm seeing the Jeskai decks are playing three of them.
Yeah, I like two. I could be convinced of three, but I really like two.
This player, by the way, IVC is the one that posted the results with this one, is playing Detention Sphere in the main in addition to two Teferis, which I kind of am in favor of that. I think Detention Sphere is just so good right now. It's really good against the Hollow One decks.
Detention Sphere is great.
And you need it on three, really, in those cases. Teferi is just too slow in that case.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think like if people are arguing, like, where does Teferi fit, he fits in, like, a spot that you would put something like a Detention Sphere. Like, if you're going to play one Teferi, you can shave a Detention Sphere and go down to one Detention Sphere.
That could be true. I would be hard-pressed to cut my Detention Sphere. I think something else is coming out first.
Sure. I mean... There are certainly things that, like, can go. Like, I don't like the Gideon package. Like,
you don't? No. Okay.
I think Gideon was flavor of the month for quite some time. I don't really like it anymore.
Yeah, I think I'll be cutting some Gideons. I'm going to be putting two Teferis in my deck in place of one Gideon ally and one Jace.
Yeah, like, and if you're a person
that's an
like,
expert.
Yeah, if you're a person that's like, I don't want to go below two Jace and you want to play this fairy, you can't find something else, that's where I'd say, okay, I guess if you have two Detention Spheres, you can cut one, and it's not embarrassing, and I wouldn't fault you. But at the same time, if like you're going to cut your only Detention Sphere for Teferi, I'd be like, nope, don't do that. like I would test the zero Detention Sphere mono Teferi control deck and see if it's any good. But, like that's certainly something I would test. I would just be like, well, how many Teferis do I reasonably think I can play? And if the answer is three, I'm going to start with cut all my Detention Spheres, cut something else, and just, like, play a bunch of Teferis and see is it good enough or is it not? And if it's not, then you can, like, slide a Teferi out for a sphere and make some room elsewhere and, like, you know, kind of move things around. I think that Teferi, I think, is certainly, for the foreseeable future, a one-of in these decks and probably a two-of.
I mean, every time I see it played, it's in two.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that, like, the people who are playing it haven't played the correct number of cherries. I'm saying that, like, for the foreseeable future, if I'm building a control deck, I'm finding a place for a Teferi, at least. I think sure. The card is good enough that it warrants getting a slot somewhere in the 75, and probably in the 60.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, I could totally be convinced to play two. I could even be convinced to play three. I won't touch the full four Teferis in Modern. That's just too many 5-mana cards.
No, yeah, that's a little insane.
But,
like, you know, even if you just use it as a 5-mana sorcery removal spell,
yeah,
it's easy to just cycle through them. You know, you don't have to worry about, like, the extra copies being bad because you got one on the table. Oh, I'm just going to minus three. There's always a target for that. You know, get rid of it, play a new one.
That's why I'm, like, I could see playing three Teferi at the, like, top end of, like, I'm a Teferi control deck. And that is the way I'm winning the game, is by playing Teferi, ultimating it, eat all of your lands, and then, like, attacking you with a Celestial Colony.
Sure. Speaking of Teferi deck, being a Teferi deck, we're almost out of time, by the way. I just want to add one more thing here.
Sure.
If we're totally going off the deep end, and I honestly think that the Jeskai and the blue-white, like, Miracles approach is probably the best way to do things.
I like
but
going
if you
want to
have
deep
some
end.
Fun,
let's go off
if you want to have some fun, blue-white Tron... It's not too far off. We're already seeing, like, Giftstron being played. But I think if we want to maximize potential of Teferi, untapping an Urza's Tower in, you know, any Hollowed Fountain or whatever it may be, you have access to, like, a huge Condescend. You've got a Repeal for three. You've also got Aetherize, which is a really big sideboard piece for those decks.
Is Teferi the hero I've been waiting for? Because I'm not going to lie, I've got a blue-white Tron deck with, like, Beta Basics and Antiquities Tron Lands just sitting around in my apartment, and I haven't been able to put it into sleeves because I can't justify playing a deck that's, like, just strictly worse than Blue-White Control. But, man, Teferi...
I don't know if it's strictly worse.
Teferi that's setting like... up a Gifts Ungiven on your opponent's turn? Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, Gifts Ungiven is the best target. Now, you have to play, you know, those decks always play some kind of blue-white mana rock. I think you need to play Azorius Signet in that case, because that one provides both blue and white.
No, you play, like, three Signet, you play, like, three or four Signets, and then, like, also a Talisman. Like, the Talisman is the fifth rock if you play a Talisman.
Yeah. Unfortunately, but here's the awkward part about that, though. Teferi doesn't untap the Signets, it only untaps the land. So if you're, like, relying on that Signet for your colored sources, like, you're going to end up with a bunch of colorless land.
Yeah, that's a little
rough. A little unusual. I think you have to go kind of heavy on colored land sources and then, you know...
Oh, yeah,
you don't even need the full set of Tron lands, right?
Didn't you play
a Tron deck that had, like, three of one?
Ten. I played a ten-land Tron deck. So four Tower, three Mine, three Power Plant. Because you're actually, like, your blue-white Tron deck is not actually a Tron deck. It's a control deck that uses Kola's cards as a finisher.
Yeah, and the game goes so long, you draw so many cards with these types of spells. It's like, you're going to find it, even if you're not searching for it with Expedition maps.
Yeah, I mean, especially with Planeswalkers. So, like, the problem is you never really had a stopgap Planeswalker that also drew you cards. So, like, Teferi creating Velocity, like, means you could potentially cut Thirst for Knowledge. Because, like, I've been looking for a reason to cut the Unbarrow Rites part of the Giftstron deck and, like, not be Giftstron. Like, that's the thing I've run into with Giftstron is that, like, Unbarrow Rites is stupidly powerful, but, like, it makes you so susceptible to Graveyard Hate.
Yeah.
And, like, you have this unbelievable clunker in Unbarrow Rites that is just garbage.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I don't think you need it.
And then on top of all that, like, you have to play four Thirst for Knowledge. Because you have to be able to discard the, like, giant clunky cards in your deck, like Mindslaver and Iona and Elesh Norn and Gifts Ungiven, or, like, a Barrow Rites when you draw them. And so, like, you have to play, like, it locks in so many of your slots to play Giftstron. So you're, like, four Thirst, four Gifts, the three Idiots. Like, that's 11 slots of your spells that don't do anything.
Are you itching to cut Thirst? Because that, to me, is, like, one of the incentives to play Blue Tron in the first place. Especially, now, in this case, Teferi untaps your lands. You've got Thirst mana. That's
so, yeah,
a good thing to do with that.
And so, like, I could see keeping Thirst. But I'm just saying, like, because you were playing Giftstron, like, you had to have Thirst to, like, deal with the Unbarrow Rites pieces and the expensive cards. And then you had to play Gifts to make the Unbarrow Rites package playable. So you locked in, like, more spells in a control deck than you really wanted to have as, like, Stone Cold Box.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the thing I ran into. It's just like you locked in so many spells so quickly that there was no point in playing Gifts because you couldn't put enough one-ups in your deck. Like, you couldn't have enough bullets.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll leave it at that. I want you to come back to us with that.
And I'm going to marinate that.
I think I'm going to try the same.
You might see a giftless Blue White Tron deck out of me soon. I'm gonna sketch it out on a pad at home and see what it looks like.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to give it a shot at some point here. I don't know if I can come up with one in the next week, but that was my first inclination with this guy, and now I'm seeing it just does so much more in other cases. It's got to be even better in a gift deck than I had originally thought.
Yeah.
So, all right, man.
Sick.
Well, I think we better close out on that. I think we'll have to report back next week, and I'm sure we'll have some more Teferi results as they're coming in, even today, more of them.
Yeah.
All right, awesome. Well, thanks for listening.
Take it easy.
Talk to you later. Card Knock Life is proud to be a part of MTGcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website, and if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.